woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, hello, friends. That's Jack. Santa Mali's Mr. Matt Weber on the board, along with Dave Scutina. S&P futures down 2, Dow futures down 55, NASDAQ futures up 32. So we are pausing here for like a nanosecond on our big, huge rally. And Kevin, how are you? Are you paused as well?
I am paused. Midterm grades went in last night, and I don't have a class for till next Tuesday, so I am paused.
Well, that's good. Are you going to go out and play like some tackle football before Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow, like the old days?
No.
No.
I could consider watching some tackle football, but I don't think I'll play tackle football.
So
how about college basketball tipping off today? I'm excited about
that. Isn't that great?
So great.
I thought we waited till Midnight Madness was. Actually, Midnight Madness was October 31st, wasn't it? Back in the day.
Yeah, it used to be, or October 15th or something like that.
It definitely wasn't the end of November.
Yep. But the, I need to pull up the schedule for Notre Dame basketball. You'll get a kick out of this.
You need to think pre-COVID. Pre-COVID.
Yeah, well, here's how they open up now. Michigan State, Western Michigan, Ohio State, Kentucky, Duke, Purdue, and Indianapolis, and then Syracuse.
Whoa. That's the schedule.
And Tennessee had to cancel.
why did they have to cancel?
Holy cow, that's a real schedule.
If they come out of that 500, then this is going to be a really good season because once it eases up. Now, that the rest of the schedule after that is all ACC teams. And they and that includes some good ones, North Carolina as an example, but it's not going to be that murderer's row every day.
Yeah, that's
every
a
week.
Who did all that? Were those people on the schedule originally, or is this just for this year?
Oh, this is a reworked schedule. I think Ohio State is the ACC Big Ten Challenge game. Kentucky, they signed a three-game deal where they do, the first one's there. There's another one in South Bend, and there's a third one at a neutral site. Duke is an ACC game. Purdue is the Crossroads Classic that they play every year. So, yeah, some of those. And then you get Syracuse's ACC game. So it's really the Michigan State game, I think, was the late addition as they reworked the schedule. And that's their first game that they're playing on Saturday night.
Well, which would you rather start with, the COVID vaccine protocols or the most popular cocktail recipes per state? Now, how can you figure out in this day and age what the most popular cocktail recipes are per state when all those bars are closed?
That's a good question. Am I willing to bet that Wisconsin's most popular cocktail recipe is beer?
No, these are cocktails. Already you're off to a different...
Yeah, in Wisconsin that is a cocktail.
I'm just saying, these are hard drink cocktails. So you're,
okay.
You're,
so what's, you're, what's the hard drink cocktail of choice in Illinois?
We Mountains. You know, it was just, he told me to get Wisconsin. I was down there.
Illinois. Oh, okay. Well, let's do Wisconsin. Let's do Illinois. Let's do Arizona. Let's hit up the important ones.
Well, this is how long since I've been in a bar in Illinois. Since they've been closed. Manhattan? I know they were making a little bit of a comeback. I never thought they'd make it to number one.
Yeah, I'm guessing they haven't, but okay.
Some of these, this is how old I am. Indiana, what the hell is a French 75?
I have no idea. I think she tried to pick me up once, but...
Louisiana is a bushwhacker. No idea what that is. Kentucky is a lily. Kansas is a screwdriver. That part I get when I get. A bunch of them are... Actually, I think more states have old fashions than anything else. Maryland is a kamikaze. Michigan is a Cosmo. A lot of ladies like the Cosmo. Cosmo martinis.
Right.
So what's a Cosmo? You put some red vermouth in there as well?
I have no idea. I don't do mixed drinks.
Utah is a Cape Cod, whatever that is. Just saying.
Okay. Who has the margarita?
Actually, there's a couple here. I will find them. A state you wouldn't have guessed, actually. I just saw the damn thing. Somebody, Montana of all places, wants a blue Hawaiian. I don't know what that is. Maine is a margarita.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Do they make lobster margaritas?
Maine and Connecticut are margaritas. Alabama is a hurricane. I would have guessed Louisiana was a hurricane, but they're not. Being at Pat O'Brien's a couple times. Alaska, a whiskey sour.
Hey, I got whacked on the shins and told I couldn't sleep in Pat O'Brien's once.
I can understand it.
It was close, you know, it was late.
Arizona is the Paloma. I have no idea what that is. California is also Paloma. I'm mad he was just in California. He should know what that is. But he's probably instructing. Florida is a Cuba Libre.
Heard of it, don't know how to make one.
Georgia, a Sazerac. What in God's name is that? Hawaii, a lemon drop martini. I guess that's a martini with a lemon in it, I would guess. Anywho, well, that's at least somewhat interesting. Now, the other one here, I sent you, I don't know if you read this or not, talking about the vaccines that are coming out and the protocols and how they are, the problems they're having with them and how they're counting. It's so interesting that if you look at the way the Karens and the total losers of the world are all over everybody else and the other solution. Virtually everything that people give people crap about with any other solution is involved in these vaccines. So this particular article, and it's written by Berkeley Lovelace Jr. How's that for a name? I wonder if he's any...
That sounds like a porn star.
Well, I was going to say, is he Linda Lovelace's daughter or son or what? Jesus. Anyway... Hey, who was Linda Lovelace? I'm not supposed to know who that was. They're saying that there are side effects to this thing. Okay.
Yes.
And the issue is that it's two doses. So they're thinking that an awful lot of people are going to say the hell with it after the first dose. Because evidently, what do you get? The second? Because potentially unpleasant side effects, similar symptoms associated with mild muscle pain, chills, and headache, plus you might get something at the site. In other words, soreness where they gave you the shot. That could happen. But the interesting part is the same things that people are essentially bitching at everybody else about. And I'm not saying they're wrong. In the same things that have been confounding about this disease. Well, for me, nothing has changed since the article I read in March when we first heard about this thing. About the Korean kid that had all the antibodies, he had the disease, and he had no symptoms. And how contagious it was, and he didn't even know he had it. I'm thinking, we got a real problem with this disease, and guess what? Here we are, 8 months later, and we still have not addressed, or can't address, because maybe it's not addressable, those issues. It's the only time I've ever seen in my lifetime a disease like this. I'm sure there might have been one where people don't know they have it and are giving it to other people. Or we think they're giving it to other people. But now this particular test is interesting, and there's a couple, I'll just keep
going. But, what's interesting about that, Tom, is if masks work, then, if masks are important, that means that we're spreading them by spreading symptoms, coughs, I think it's pretty hard to spread it when you're breathing. And I know everybody claims that you can do that in your droplet.
Well, you probably can.
It's really, if masks are doing any protection, they're doing it because you're coughing, you're sneezing, those kinds of things get limited. And if you don't know you have it and you don't have any symptoms and that's how you spread it, then the symptoms are how you spread it, how does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but the whole idea, you can't ever give anybody a certitude. You can't say, and our society right now is not about likelihood. It's about if you don't have a mask on one side of the street, somebody on the other side is going to bitch at you. Is it possible that on a huge windy day, if you sneezed, if one minuscule droplet happened to fly across the street and land in the other person's eye, could it be, one in a gazillion chance, like hitting an asteroid? I don't think anybody could say there's no chance there. But yet,
right. A droplet with a targeting system like missiles have.
Yeah, sort of. But anyway, I was reading about this, and I read a couple of studies last night, so this is kind of from memory, but they picked some 30-some thousand people, okay, in Brazil and I forget where the other place was. And this is the AstraZeneca one that came out with the 70% effectiveness, and people, of course, are saying, people that don't ever want to read past the first line, why the hell would you want one that is only X percent effective when in fact the reason why you do is because this one doesn't have, only can be refrigerated versus 70 below zero, right? So it's a big difference. And 70% is not bad. But here's the interesting part. They gave like six different groups either got this or they didn't use placebos. They used something called a monococcal something something. So I don't know if it's a vitamin or what it is, but it's not totally saline solution. But I don't know enough about it though, what the other one is. But it's essentially, it's a placebo, but it's not exactly a stone cold dead placebo type of thing, which is weird. But the what happens is they gave it to all these people, and when everybody is saying they have it or don't, you have to be symptomatic. They're not following all 37,000 people and testing them like every other day. Now, the way this test has worked, we don't have the morals anymore, or the lack of morals, to actually give people a vaccine and then give them the disease and see if it works. I mean, even with this disease, where an incredibly high percentage of the people survive, we're not about to do that, right? So essentially what they do, all these tests, the AstraZeneca, the Pfizer, and the Moderna, they give everybody a shot or two, and they essentially send them out into society. So in one case, there was 44,000 people, and it was 30-some, and then there was 27. So out of the 44,000 people, or 24 or 34, they now report people just in society during under normal walks of life, how many of them pick up COVID-19 versus, then they say, oh, Matt Weber seems to have COVID-19. Is he a placebo guy or is he the vaccine guy? And they say, well, he's a placebo guy. Okay. So what they did was said after like 200 people or 150 or whatever it was picked up the COVID out of the 44,000, 34 or whatever, then they said, okay, it seems like everybody who's getting it got the vaccine. So out of 150 people that have the COVID, 135 or 140 of them were the placebo people, and the other 10 or 15 were the vaccine people. So we're going to say it's 90% effective. It's not 90% effective, but it's out of the 90% that have, out of the 100% that have caught it since then, 90% were the ones that were on the placebo, not the vaccine. And even though the math there is a little tricky, that's considered legitimate in those circles. So I have no bitch about what they're, but the interesting part, Kevin, is they're not running around and testing you every other day or anything like that. They're waiting until you report a symptom, which puts us right back into
where we were.
Right, back where we were.
Asymptomatic people.
But we may or may not. We don't know. So they're not even looking for that. They have no way to track that. So there could be, for instance, if the vaccine just makes it a lot easier on somebody. Those people, I'm not saying they are, I hope they're not, they could be actually getting it And if you're one of these people, you know, the same people that you could sneeze on somebody across the street, you could say, well, what if that guy got it or that lady got it? She could actually be passing it on to other people, even though she's asymptomatic, and what have we really accomplished? Now, I sure hope to God that that's not what's happening here. But the way this is being tracked, that could easily fall through the crack. If it's happening, now whether it is or it isn't, but virtually nobody who's been, this is the good news, nobody who's been on the vaccine in any of these studies, I think, has ended up in the hospital or with really bad symptoms. So even the four or five that have gotten it, or 10 out of the 100 and some, nobody's ended up with horrible symptoms. So even the few that seem to have gotten it, seem to be doing better or not life-threatening. But here's the interesting part. Explain to me, as you're a supply chain management dude, explain to me how the hell a place like AstraZeneca could bleep up this bad for a huge part of the people. The first dose, they're supposed to give you two doses. They only gave people a half a dose the first time, by mistake. How the hell do you do that? I mean, what goes on in Brazil stays in Brazil. But they only gave people a half a dose, and then somehow found out that it was a problem. And then the second time through, gave people the first dose, was the full dose, and then a week later you get the second dose. If you show up, because they said the first dose is like a flu shot. You could actually get sick from that, and somebody could say, screw it, I'm not coming back for the second one. I felt fine before you did this to me. It doesn't sound like it's that bad, but who knows? Some people just, you know, wouldn't go back.
Yeah, so when you ask how it can happen, it's because spell check doesn't get numbers.
Right. But now here's the interesting part. The people who got the half a dose and then the full dose are doing better than the people who got the full doses both times. Now, is that an abnormality, or is that something
worth knowing? Because yeah, that might affect, you know, maybe instead of two doses, you're supposed to get three or four.
At half,
out over a period of time.
At half. But the other part is, I mean, if you were to say to somebody, like I, for one, and I've been straight up with this on the air, I have tested positive, and 2 weeks later I went and got my antibody shot or test, and I have all these antibodies. So I could give you plasma if you wanted it, if I felt like giving blood, or you wanted it. But anyway, if I say that to anybody, Kevin, they'll say, well, you don't know how long those antibodies are any good. You still should wear a mask. I said, I know that it's somewhere, like a SARS is 2 years, so it's probably somewhere between 14 months and 36 months. But it's not tomorrow. You don't know that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know it's not this week. So,
yeah, I know it's not this week.
Whatever else it is or isn't, ain't this week.
But still, people be all over it. Yet the vaccine, the person who wrote this article, and he was very pro-vaccine, by the way, so am I, especially when I read the part that they're only using one protein, so they're not giving your body the whole virus. So there's no way other than the site being a problem or the shot itself. I don't see there's any way you could actually get this thing from the shot, because they're not giving it to you. It's not giving you a dead one. They're not giving you one that's been denutted, as they say, or something. They're actually only giving you one protein.
Yeah, that's the medical term.
Yeah, I don't think it's the medical term, but anyway, so I'm saying that if you walk through the tests have the same flaws in them as this particular vaccine has been causing trouble from day one. Yet, I'll tell you what, I would roll with one of these vaccines, although I think they do need one, even if the efficacy is... By the way, the people who got the half a dose and the full dose, they were 90%. So how weird is that? Which is everybody as good as the other two vaccines.
So maybe the dose. Maybe we're overdosing here.
We could be. Overdosing. Didn't we used to do that on beer once in a while in college?
Beer is not what I recall.
Anyway.
So there's still a lot of tweaking, and that's
yeah,
part of the reason, you know, that's part of having this on a fast track
right,
like this, is there's, there's news, and yet things that we are still going to learn, and we're going to learn them after we roll it out.
But I think people need to have you have to have your mind open on all this stuff. And just, I for one, since I've been reading this stuff the last 4 days, I'm fascinated by how quickly people were able to do this. But the thought of using just, this is not, of course, don't take the party line, that somehow or another we all just started this, you know, 9 months ago. The research into viral immunity and using just one or two proteins off the virus versus the whole virus like they used to use has been coming down the pipe for a while. And it didn't just start fresh with that. A lot of this stuff has been that people, you know, people experiment and do stuff like every day in these hospitals and in these universities and so forth. So there's a lot of basic research that is paid for by the government, by these companies, by stuff that people do good work like every day in this country. And once in a while it comes to fruition. And it looks like this time, if these guys can pull this off in 10 months, you know, even if they did have a head start, so what, Kevin? It's pretty damn good, I'd say.
It is. It's really, it's an impressive effort. Yeah, and you know, when you hear, I hear all the time, well, you know, we should have had a national plan. We should have had a national plan. This is the national plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is it. And in addition to this, that to the development of the vaccine, and we just spent half the class on this yesterday in logistics class because I thought it would be a darned interesting topic. It's not just the development; it's gearing up supply chains for it. You know, so we, you know, I spent a lot of time just, you know, doing foundational stuff, laying out how the cold chain works in general. But we have had, you know, companies gearing up their cold storage capabilities and their shipping capabilities. All of this is happening in parallel. And, you know, those that don't have the, first of all, there are other pharmaceuticals that have to be in that ultra cold environment. So we do have the ability to distribute the Pfizer vaccine. It's just, do we have enough capacity to do it? And they've been ramping up their capacity so that they could store at those uber cold temperatures. And then it turns out that on the Pfizer vaccine, it can spend a few days at lower levels, at more temperature levels.
Right before
so
you use it.
They're building out for that a just-in-time model for it so that when you order it, you get an immediate shipment, and you try to, you don't want to overship, you don't want to undership. And so that's happening. Meanwhile, the other ones have their own different kinds of distribution plans work in the works. And this is all coming together at the same time. So, you know, again, when you say, well, we don't have a national plan, or we, you know, who was the politician that said we need a Marshall Plan for this? Oh, it was somebody that quit Trump's team. There is a Marshall Plan for it. This is it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you can say we have a plan to get the 70 below zero stuff from, where are they, Grand Rapids or they're somewhere in Michigan, right? Pfizer's big factory.
Well, yeah, but they're going to be several places.
Right, but I'm saying
can be produced.
I don't think there's any question. We have a plan to get that, meaning dry ice and whatever, from there to Chicago. I don't think we have a worldwide plan to get it to Argentina.
They don't have the same capacities in most of the world. A place like Argentina actually probably does have what it needs to pull this off. But we don't have the same degree of capacity in places that are going to need it most, some of the poorest countries in the world. And that's a different logistical problem, and we have people working on that, too. But most developed countries have been distributing pharmaceuticals with temperature requirements for a long time. So it's just a matter of figuring out what the right ones are for this particular instance and making sure that there's the capacity. Some of them will have limits on their capacity. They won't be able to do it as quickly as we like. Others will handle it pretty seamlessly, and they've already been working on how to handle it pretty seamlessly.
Well, I'll give you we only have 2 minutes, and we'll dig into some heavy stuff after the break, but this kind of effort, this kind of have the problem, solve the problem, goes on day by day, from all the people, I mean, I'm not casting a shot here, I guess maybe I am. You just watch TV and write nasty letters to people. This happens all the time. Matter of fact, my brother Dan worked for GATX, and they make tank cars, right? And, you know, they make ones for oil, they make ones for other, you know, whatever. And he was Kevin, you remember, it was before David maybe, but it's before Matt Weber. Remember when the guy threw the snowball out of the skybox at Mile High Stadium and landed next to the kicker and he blew the kick? Dan was in the skybox right next to the guy. He's got an amazing arm. So no warm-up, nothing. He landed from the skybox to the field.
Are you sure it wasn't Dan that threw it?
No,
Dan's
it wasn't
got
not
a really
Dan.
Good arm.
He was the young guy in with his superiors. Well, the story was, for those who drink Coors beer, Coors doesn't want to brew beer anywhere but in Colorado because the hardest thing to match up in beer, because Dan knows how to brew beer pretty well, the hardest thing to match up with is to make sure your water is the same at every one of your plants. Now, if you got a Budweiser plant and you're pulling water out of the Mississippi or you're pulling it out of New York Harbor, obviously you got a problem in matching up the water. But those guys are good enough, the chemists, they do. Coors didn't want to take that chance. So they wanted to bottle beer in Virginia. They didn't want to make it there. So they wanted to ship the beer from Golden, Colorado to Virginia. Problem is they wanted it refrigerated. So they wanted GATX to design railroad cars that no matter what, if they sat in 100-degree heat for 4 days or it was 5 below zero, the beer inside did not change temperature from like 37 degrees plus or minus 3 degrees. And they managed to do it. And they have like 10 cars that
and
go back
and forth. And nowadays you have the containers, the shipping containers that you see on big cargo ships.
Yeah.
They'll do the same thing. This is how we get so much good produce from other parts of the world, because they can maintain the temperature for weeks if necessary in the shipping containers. So this is a problem. These kinds of problems are this is part of logistics, and it's really the stuff that we've been doing for a long time. The nice thing here is that instead of screwing things up like it usually does, we've actually managed to let government get the hell out of the way, assist where necessary, and otherwise don't hinder the efforts, and that's that's been actually a really good story out of this year, one of the few really good stories out of this year.
When's the last time you used dry ice?
I don't know, but I'd like to have some investment right now in a dry ice company.
Yeah, no kidding. S&P futures up 2.25, NASDAQ futures up 44. We're up, but not like yesterday's. We went through 30,000 on the Dow. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason.
I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Carson Jock.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. He's Mr. Matt Weber. Also, Mr. Dave Scantino is going to be doing traffic, weather, sports here. And he could sound more south side than me. I didn't know that was possible. S&P, of course, he lived 2 doors away from me, so I guess, I don't know, one of us infected the other. S&P futures up 250, NASDAQ futures up 43. Dow futures down, 20, down. We can't be down. Come on, come on. The market can't be down. We're supposed to make money every day. DAX down 20 points, 0.1%. FTSE down 42.6%. CAC around up 4, let's call that flat. We're in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 131. Nikkei's been up pretty much every day. 0.5%. Shanghai down 40, that's 1.2%. A little bit of an outlier there. Hang Seng up 81.3%. Wave yesterday, Dow up 454 to close at 30,046. Yippee, over 30,000. We didn't have any hats on the New York Stock Exchange floor yesterday. I was surprised. S&P's up 57, it's 1.6%. NASDAQ was up 156, 1.3. Bonds. Bonds cannot move 0.87. Bund minus 0.57. Japan positive 0.02. Bonds are looking at this and not even participating, which is really weird. Oil up 30 cents, 45.21. Brent up 35 cents, 48.21. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.75. RBOB, 126. It's possible to get gasoline under $2 on the south side. It's been that way in a while. Gold up 4.90. Talk about a dead cat bounce. 18.09. Silver up 8 cents, 23.38. Copper down a penny, 3.28. David, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
It's 6:38 this morning. Traffic is light due to holidays coming up. We do have one incident on a Stevenson. There's a gaper's delay due to a vehicle spin out in the right ditch. I-355 to Lakeshore Drive is 29 minutes. Today's weather, currently, it is 45 and foggy. The high today is going to be a wonderful 48 degrees with rain and drizzle. Our Phoenix listeners, is 44 and clear. The high today will be 72 and sunny. In sports, not a lot happening last night. We do have the beginning of college basketball seasons for all those fans. And the top four teams for college football came out. Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State.
Well,
back
that
to
would,
you, Chief.
That would be them. That would be is college basketball. No fans or by school like the football.
It's like football. It depends on where you are. Notre Dame is no fans to start. I should put in. I got to put in some media credential requests for some of those games. But there are no fans to start. They'll decide again after the first of the year, and prioritize individual game tickets for people who've been season ticket holders like me.
So do you think Matty Weber could get us like six for Stacks and Jacks?
Actually, I can credential for ND Nation, so I may put in for a couple of games. I don't know. It's the way they do the games. I'd enjoy seeing them in person. But by the same token, the whole post game ritual, and I would have to participate in that, is not what it used to be, and so I haven't done it now for 2 years. It used to be that that the players would come out in the players lounge and just sit around, and anybody could talk to them. So everybody would, of course, surround the the guys who had big games or anything, and I would always wait for everybody to leave. Before I wanted to talk to anybody, because I don't want to talk about the game. I want to talk about other stuff. So, you know, I could have good conversations with them, but 2 years ago they started bringing them out into the press room and sitting two guys up at the press table to take, you know, random questions from the crowd. And so I could no longer have a conversation. I just have to ask a question. And I've done that with Mike Bray before, and that's fine. Especially with Bray, if you ask him a good question, you know, if you can get him to talk shop, and he will give you a really good long answer. But if you are talking about you know, the players, you know, you sit around while you know, some reporter says, hey, what allows you to have such a good second half after having a you know, struggling in the first half? Oh, what a stupid question.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I don't have a lot of patience for the stupid questions that they ask. So.
You can always run over and interview Digger. He's always available.
Yeah, Digger's always available. You know, I can go over to practice and do interviews. That's no problem if it doesn't conflict with my teaching schedule. You know, they announce availability, and I can arrange to interview anybody I want. So
you do remember.
So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. You know, I'll have to look at the schedule and see if I want to request any games as a media creature.
Well, you remember,
I would have to actually write a game story, and I don't. You know, like I said, I like writing about basketball. I like writing about the interesting things, like, you know, team development, leadership. You know, some of the mentality stuff, like, you know, what's your shooter's mentality versus, you know, what do you do when you're cold? What do you do when you're hot? You know, how people approach the game. I've actually had exactly one guy told me that he heat checks early and doesn't shoot anymore if he's not hitting right away.
I'm going to say that was Grant.
Other than that, they all tell you that. That no, you know, if it's a good shot, I take it. Eventually, they'll start dropping. Jaron Grant told me, nope, I heat check. I know if I'm going to be hot early in the game, you know, I'll stop taking three pointers if I'm not hitting them.
Well, you remember the one where the Three Stooges tried to break in using the press passes?
Pull.
Yeah, where Mo goes in, press, and runs by the guy, and Larry press, and then Curly goes, pull. Yark, yark.
They stole some buttons. Where, from the men's room or something?
Yeah.
You know, and one of them said press, and the next one said press, and then the third one said pull.
God, the people who wrote that stuff. I mean, I don't think there gets to be any different comedy. I mean, it's all kind of the same, isn't it?
So, well, you have to appreciate the truly silly stuff, and I do, by the way.
Well, real quick, because I want to talk about the market and inflation and what the motivations and stuff are there. But when you look at comedy that has lasted a while, and you look at essentially the biggest you know, comedy shows that have been forever, starting really with the Stooges, it's always three people. It's the control. It's virtually every personality that certainly males have. It's the control freak. It's the guy who just wants everybody to get along, and there's the goofball, right? And no matter what you do, no matter what the show is, there's somehow those elements are in there. And if you look at the Honeymooners, Ralph was a control freak, Norton was the goofball, and the women were the steady Eddies. They were the Larrys, right? And I mean, you look at even Amos and Andy, who nobody's supposed to watch anymore. Well, the Kingfish was the goofball, and Andy was the crazy guy, and then Amos was the guy who kind of got everybody back together at the end of the show, right? I mean, it follows its way through every single one of them, the themes. And it's virtually every personality, so whoever watches it can see themselves there someplace. Yeah, I'm kind of like Mo. I'm kind of like Curly, you know, or I just want all the goofballs to get along. I'm more like Larry. I mean, everybody can see their personality there someplace, so it appeals to everybody, really. Even a lot of ladies who claim that it doesn't. But anyway, so much for that. Kevin, we've had this incredible move in the market. We have, in my mind, inflation breaking out all over the damn place, and I've got a lot of the listeners sending me emails and stuff, giving me examples of it. But in this week, I mean, I've heard some stories, not my clients, but heard some stories that, you know, one person started the week out with retirement account, got canned, all he had was 50 grand. Well, 50 grand is not nothing. With his retirement account, and just said screw it and bought options all over the place, which of course I would hope I'd never let anybody do. And the guy's up like 250 in a week. I mean, the movement here is incredible. We've had positions in the Russell, the IWM, for 2 years now, and made a few bucks by being short calls. Thing has never moved, and all of a sudden the thing is up $25 in like 4 days. And this is just incredibly crazy stuff. And I remember being in class like it was yesterday with Milton Friedman and him saying, the biggest danger about inflation is the first parts of it are so enjoyable. It's like the guy who shows up with the first six pack for the football game that everybody's watching. Because it is what's the matter? We print some money, we throw it out there, and all of a sudden everybody's rich. Prices go up. I mean, everybody who looked at, you know, the encroachment, how is that for a football term, of the big boxes. Can anybody even name? I do a lot of construction in my building and help people out other places. I love doing it. I can't even, I guess this is not totally a true statement. I can probably find one independent and everything you want to talk about. I mean, if you want to go buy a faucet, I could get you a faucet independent guy. I could probably find you a place where you can get some sheetrock or drywall. Independent guy. But by and large, I would say that 95% of the people in the country cannot even name a home supply store that is not Home Depot, Menards, or Lowe's right now.
Big C Lumber.
Well, I'm saying, but you drive, but I mean, Indiana.
So I'm in the 5%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that 5%, maybe 90. I mean, you can name a place. I mean, Fox's Lumber is still there in Chicago. But it's you got to think about it, though, right? I mean, you really got to think.
No, I knew right away. It's right up the road.
Okay, well, you drive by it every day.
Oh, in my case, no. But Big C is, they have, probably half a dozen stores in this area.
Okay. And
it's Big C Lumber, but it's lots of stuff, too. It's not just lumber.
Okay, but, you know, I can name you a cabinet place or plumbing place, but by and large, I mean, what is their percentage of the market now compared to the big three? I mean,
That would be interesting. I don't know off the top of my head. It's a store that's always busy and has a lot of local support, and I don't know that it's support just because it's local. But they're there, and I assume that in small cities such places exist. They probably exist in large cities too, but in small cities, you know, they're kind of institutions. It's sort of like in this area. If you looked at tire stores, aside from the big box stores, and if you order online from Tire Rack, and Tire Rack's over here, you can actually drive into Tire Rack here too. But if you look at a place like Zollman Tire, who is a local business that's really, really successful, are they ever going national? Don't think so. But they probably have 10 stores in, you know, spread out through Southwest Michigan and North Central.
But I'm going to say,
and it's a really good operation.
But I'm going to say, Kevin, that those places have zero pricing power. And this is where
they don't, except that they just match.
Right.
They match anybody's, you know, so the Bell Tires that are in the area or Tire America, you know, those kind of places, they just say, we'll match anybody here.
But I'm saying the formula for pricing power, and I'll use the, and once in a while I like to lob some economics out there for everybody who maybe didn't have the advantages of some of the teachers I did. When you take a look at OPEC right now, when you talk about do people have pricing power, I think they have none right now. When I say pricing power,
right. They'll probably get it back, but yeah, for
maybe.
Now they have none.
Well, but what happens is you have pricing power if you can say, okay, I'm selling widgets at $1 a throw. Hey, you know, screw that. Nobody else, there's no widget really competitors around here. I'm going to raise my price to $1.50. Now, if you can end up with more revenue than you started with, then you've got pricing power. Just like when OPEC in those days could raise the price of oil from 30 to 40 bucks by withholding oil. In other words, if they cut their production by 10% and the price of oil went up more than 10%, then they ended up as would a positive in revenue, even though they had to come up with less oil. So that's considered serious monopoly pricing power if you can do that. Right now, I would say that if OPEC cut their prices cut their output by 20%, maybe the price of oil would go up 2%, 3%, which puts OPEC is a big fat loser, right? Not a winner. So I'm saying the problem with this constant concentration industries that it's, I mean, Amazon, it's, you know, that's what people worry about those. I mean, right now, Home Depot could probably raise their prices certainly 15% to 20% on everything you never thought of. It wouldn't be on their lead items, okay? It would be on the screws. It would be on the knobs for the cabinets. It would be on the glue for the tile. Most people wouldn't even know. I'll bet they would, if they raise their price 15%, Kevin, I'll bet the revenue goes up 14 or 13. I mean, it's dramatic how much it would go up, because it's not like if they raise the price of X from $1 to $1.50, everybody would know that you could get X down the block at Kevin's or Big C or the place you're talking about for $1, and all of a sudden Home Depot didn't sell a one of them. That, they're way beyond that. And a lot of these places really are. They're just way beyond that. So if inflation were to fly in here for real, we've got a problem, because we got bottlenecks all over the place in industries we never even thought we had. In 1973, it was just oil. Now it's every place, right?
Yeah, and we're going to see it.
And, well, we already are, I think. But now.
Well, we already are, but it's not being. If it's being measured, it's not being reported. So it will. There's a lag in the realization across the population. But what I think's going to, you know, so this is what's going to happen is, all this stuff is, these chickens are going to come home to roost during the Biden administration, and Trump's going to spend the next 4 years saying, "See, I told you so." Well, it's all their fault.
But if you're in the know, if you're in the, and you know that the Fed is going to continue to do this, to have this constant party and throw money in. I mean, right now, I mean, everybody knows that for years and years now, we've had a protected program. We try and look at the market like, we like to have a little positive bias to it, but by and large, we like to protect the downside and you know, think that a 7-8% year is a good year. So if you can lean a little long and protect yourself from the dumps and actually make some money on the way down, or be able to roll, that actually you can have a really good year. I mean, we're not set up. I mean, for this, a stock is 15 and 2 months ago, and now it's 40 with like no increase in revenue. I mean, or anything like that. I mean, granted, a lot of people are. A lot of people are just flat ass lying it, and they're having a spectacular month. But don't think for a second. Well, I guess if we double, a lot of things to look at, Kevin. If the market's up roughly 15% on the year, 15, maybe 20%. The money supply is up 30. Is it really up? That's why, but it is so uneven. That's why every day now it seems like I'm constantly ragging on what's this going to do to the guy who doesn't get a raise and doesn't own stock or doesn't own his home. I mean, look at the home ownership. We love it when home prices go up, because people who have money are the owners of the houses. They're not the buyers, right? So I mean, we're listening to whether this stuff is good or bad out of the view, and it's not just Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post. This has to do with when stocks go up and the people you listen to on TV, they own stocks. This is the greatest thing in the world. Well, if it takes other stuff up with it and other people can't afford it and aren't getting a raise, it's not good for them. That's what I learned from the people in River Chicago. Inflation, our brand of inflation is so uneven, you don't want to see it. And look what happened last time. And here, these people, they could care less. I mean, Kevin, do you think for a nanosecond? I mean, I would have thought that now that we're through the election, you know, Trump allegedly sort of conceded, that virtually every problem that we had, and even though now we have, even if you put a million other people out of business in the next 6 months, we're going to have some vaccine that we're going to give to people, and we're going to declare this thing over. Whether it is or it isn't, I don't know, but I mean, that seems to be the plan. So we're going to go down that road. So you would think it would be time for the Fed to let up and say, okay, we really don't need to be in this crisis mode now where we're pouring like, you know, $1 billion a week into this thing or whatever many it is, maybe $10 billion a week. But they're not, Kevin. But now it's, wait a minute, I'm getting richer by the week. Keep it up, guys. I mean, why is there no pause here? Everything that was a problem 2 weeks ago is less of a problem now. And yet they haven't backed off at all, have they? Why?
Well, other than Treasury pulling back the $400 million of unspent stimulus money.
Which well, no, it was $400
million.
It was billions, first of all. Actually, I think it was
$400 billion. What did I say? Million?
Yeah, I think it might.
Sorry, I meant $400 billion.
Well, but
in my mind, it was $400 billion. Out of my mouth, it was $400 billion.
But even that, Kevin, why does that piece of information have to hit the man? Do they really think? And this is what bothers a living bleep out of me, because the people on this show and the listeners have been known to read a book without pictures. Do I really need Lori Lightfoot or every not just or Jay or whoever it is? Just because they get this spot to have to filter every single thing they say, so in words that so I can understand it. Hey, bring it on. I can understand it. Now, why can't, when we talk about the Treasury and the Fed and what Mnuchin tried to do to the Fed, and why can't we say we gave them authorization? I think it was $4.3 trillion, actually, Kevin. Why can't we say we gave them authorization to do something that they don't normally do, which is to go into the private debt markets and actually to dig into some private debts and make loans to individual companies, which they were never able to do. And we've decided to take away that capability January 30th. That to me is the story, but that's not what you hear. It's about they pulled this money back. There never was any money they gave them, for God's sake. They gave them the authorization to print it.
Right. So,
and they took the authorization back. Yet if you were to go to any, if you could go into a saloon and say, gee, what did the Munchkin just do to the Fed? He dragged the money back. No, he didn't. They didn't have it in the first place. I mean, why do we have to constantly interject this little piece of misinformation into the story? Why can't we just tell the truth?
Yeah, if anything, probably the better way to word it, and I didn't, of course, it would be to say that that they pulled back the budgeted money or something. You know, they pulled back the budget to be able to do it.
But see, Kevin, even you, as far along in this as you are, you're still not comfortable, and virtually nobody is. So I'm not singling you out, even though I just did. Nobody is when you talk about the Fed; they just print it and spend it. We still are not used to that concept, and nor we should ever get used to it, by the way. But that's what we gave them the authorization. They don't have $4 trillion sitting there in a drawer. If they decide they want to bail out, you know, Kevin's, you know, hot dog stand, they're going to go buy Kevin's paper with money that they just created. It's not that you gave them the dough. They're not borrowing it from anybody. They're just printing it. I mean, and yet, it is incredibly difficult for somebody to grasp that concept. I have trouble with it, and I've been studying it for 40 years, 50 years. You know, it is so against anybody's normal way of doing business. Let's just go in the back room, Susie, and we're going to go buy a new sofa. Let's run back and run off about 8 Benjamins and head off to wherever, the furniture store. Of course, I don't think it'd be a sofa.
Oh, this is why it's important to always have a good printer.
Oh, absolutely. hey, you know what? I was in a place the other day, and I handed him a few $5 bills. I want to say where I got them from, my attorney buddy, Greg. They checked one of the fives for counterfeit. Have things gotten that low? We're counterfeiting fives.
Well, if they're checking them, it probably means there's an advisory out there that somebody has been passing $5 bills, and so they decided to, you know, someone got the corporate memo saying you need to check them. You need to at least randomly check it. You know, I don't know how people pass counterfeit money if they, assuming they know they have counterfeit money. I don't know if they do an entire transaction or if they just kind of do mixed bags. So if they do entire transactions with counterfeit money, then you would, by randomly selecting one, you could probably catch it. But if it's just a mixed bag, then you don't know what you're getting. That, you know, that doesn't do you much good to do to pick one out and check it.
Kevin, I got a guy involved in some business, which will go nameless, and he has a partner. So they went to one of these festivals, you know, in the park, and it's not very light there or anything. So they end up at the end of the night, they sell all these, you know, I don't know what they were, T-shirts or hats or God knows what. And at the end of the day, they're counting up their dough, and they go to the bank, and it turns out two of the Benjamins are not right. They're pretty darn close, because I'm sitting there looking at a real one and that one, and I'm, if you really looked at it, you could sort of tell the difference in the paper, but there's no way you're doing that, you know, in a dark park at 10 o'clock at night. You'd never know the difference. So one of the partners says, well, where are we going to pass it?
If they won't take it at the bank, can we have it back so that we can use it someplace else?
So my buddy looks at him and goes, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, somebody passed it to us. My buddy goes,
got
to
pay it forward, man.
he goes, no, you're just as bad as the other guy if we do. What is the matter with you? Well, what are we going to do, just eat the 200? Yeah, what else are we going to do? I tell you what, I bet he's not alone though, Kevin.
Probably not. Although I don't think the bank gives it back to you, honestly.
So what's your scoop on the Irish? We'll be talking about it on Friday morning, but now they got two guys down on the offensive line.
Yeah, they do, and that's not good. The center is maybe the worst guy to lose, because that's the guy making all your calls. But they have a good football players to replace them. But the question is, are they going to get the continuity? And I'm assuming they aren't as good as the guys that were there in the first place. Otherwise, they would be the starters. So, you know, it should be good enough. North Carolina has a really potent offense, though. North Carolina is going to score some points. So if the Irish struggle on offense, that's going to be a problem, because this may be one of those, if they can hold Carolina to 28, they'll probably win. If they have to score 45 to beat them, that can make for a really interesting game.
Well, the other dude,
we'll see on Friday. We can talk more about it on
Friday. What was the other guy? Was he a guard or?
Guard, yeah. Kramer's a guard, and he had an emergency appendectomy.
What is the, after seeing how they did it at the Museum of Science and Industry years ago, an appendectomy, now they do it like with a scope? I mean, what's the...
Yeah, it's laparoscopy.
So what's the time frame for recovery?
He should be back relatively soon, but he's not going to be back tomorrow, on Friday.
No. Are you playing? Are they suiting you up?
Yeah, sure. At this point, you know, I could look like half of the other offensive linemen too, with a nice little gut hanging out of the uniform.
Okay, I think if you had that going for you, I think you'd want to wear a longer shirt. But those guys, they don't do that. It's very bizarre. All right, Kevin. SP futures down 275. NASDAQ futures down up 24. We'll see you on Friday. We've invited Lou to participate in with you on Friday. We'll see if he does. Because obviously no show tomorrow, Thanksgiving. So you have a happy Thanksgiving. I know you're not going too far. Have a good time. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Time out. Just Matt Weber and Mr. Dave Scatina and the board. SP Futures up a down a dollar. NASDAQ Futures up 23. Do we have Mr. Russell Rhodes? Russell Rhodes?
Why is the NASDAQ up? Which stock is it? It's always just like one big stock.
Let me look. Q's are up 67 cents. Well, we've got Amazon up 12. We got to be up every day.
There you go.
Google up 4. There you go. It's just a... We got Microsoft up 64 cents. We have inflation, and it is ours. What can I say?
Yes, it is. Do we get the CPI or PPI today?
I'm not sure, but I will check it.
I know it's a Wednesday number because I usually hear it first from you.
Yeah, I got so disgusted with it, I almost don't even look at it anymore because it's so contrived, it's scary. But
Well, actually, I had a dream, and maybe last night. Okay, maybe it's because this is going to sound kind of scary, but I don't dream of you often.
Okay.
But you were I just had a dream where you took CPI and you broke it down into all the components, and you said, you know, if this is really how people spend money, it would be 1950.
We could do that if you wanted. I have it on the tip of my tongue always.
Well, I don't think people want to listen to us do that, but we'll probably do it offline and then come back.
Well, you know what? Why don't we next Wednesday? Actually, there is a chart that we can actually do it in probably 10 minutes.
Okay.
Cool. If you go right to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is nothing but detailed. I mean, they are seriously detailed.
You can break that thing out into everything.
Well, just as a way of going ahead with it, if you were to, I believe, your hospitalization is like, they just nudged over 7%. It was below that. I think they've got education at like 7 or 6, and somewhere like property taxes, which is essentially the cost of primary education times
yeah.
two, right, is somewhere buried in the... economic rent of your home. So let's say the hospital is higher education, lower education, for lack of a better term, and all that together is something like 11 or 12 or 13% of the basket, maybe 15. So you tell me what person in your hood or anybody's hood that if you were to take their medical cost, their cost of sending kids to school or the property taxes that are involved in kids that are going to school in public school system, tell me where that's only 15%. If you were to ask anybody, they'd say those are the three biggest things in my arsenal.
Oh, that's much more than that for me.
Yeah.
Right off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean if you're older, the prescription drugs can be 60% of your income.
Easily.
But healthcare is up to what, 20 to 21% of the GDP, and yet it's 7% of the CPI.
Well, that just does not make a lot of sense, does it?
No, but
there are all kinds of cool motivations. Well, I shouldn't say cool. There are all kinds of motivations behind why they don't want CPI to, they don't want it to run up, for one. You know, the one of the Fed's mandates is to keep inflation under control, and maybe one of the ways to keep inflation under control is measure it differently.
Well, here's, you know how you even a guy like you who's always thinking away, you're always thinking an angle, you would find it very difficult to teach somebody how to swim and stay dry at the same time.
All right.
Now, you could probably figure out a way. I couldn't. But now, if you were the government right now as an economics professor, What would you really want if you could do two things that are diametrically opposed, but do them both? What two things would you do
that are diametrically opposed to each other?
Yep.
But I could do both.
If you could.
If I could, I would I would. And is it spending?
Well, I'm just. I have an opinion. Doesn't make it right. I got an opinion.
I'm going to sound like such a bad guy all of a sudden. The first thing pops into my mind is for us to build ourselves up militarily to the point of where China gives up on trying to overtake the world.
Way too deep. I was just being my shallow economist self here.
You'd
want to inflate the hell out of the place.
Yeah.
So that the $40 I owe you when I pay you is actually going to feel like 20. Right?
Yeah.
So you want to inflate the hell out of the place. But at the same time, you can't tell anybody about it, because if you do, you got to start giving people cost of living increases and stuff, which blows your budget even more. And you actually have to start paying interest payments that maybe blow your whole budget. So you really want inflation, but you don't want anybody to know about it. Because in reality, I think these guys, the Biden group and maybe the other groups, have decided the only way you're going to pay back the $22 trillion we owe, actually 25 if you put everything in there, is to have the dollar worth half of what it is worth now. And that's exactly the thing they're on. And people have done this, you know, all through the mercantile era. This is not a new trick.
Mm-hmm.
This trick has been, when you do economic history, I'll bet you can identify, 25 governments that have tried it back to the 1500s, right? I mean, maybe Rome even tried it, for God's sake. So it's not a new trick, is it?
No, not at all. And it's not necessarily a trick. I think it's just something that happens sometimes.
A guy like you, though, would know it's happening, and if all of a sudden, say, you owed me $20, and we doubled the money supply, you'd be the first guy to say, here, Chief, sure, 20. Instead of realizing it should be 40 now.
I don't know, but you're making me out to be a really bad guy.
No, I'm just saying, you'd be clever enough to know what was going on. I'm trying to give you a compliment here.
Yeah. I know.
But I'm saying that clearly is...
And I'm clever enough to know that's what's going to happen. I've had students ask me about, you know, the deficit and debt and all that kind of stuff, and I've just said, well, eventually we'll go through, you know, we had a lot of debt after the Vietnam War, and then in the 70s we had ridiculous inflation, and then we had some great 80s there. So there's going to be a lot, and at some point we're going to have a reckoning, and you and I have been talking about that for 2 or 3 years now.
Well, you look at the 2000s, and the one thing that I wish I could get somebody from the finance, but nobody from the House Finance Committee is going to ever come on my show. But first thing I would ask him is, even though I probably know the answer, you do too, why exactly is the deduction for capital gains stayed $3,000 since the market was $800 and now it's $30,000 as of yesterday? Because what happened during the 2000s, in one man's opinion, why did we have these surpluses? We had the surpluses because the dot-bomb crap went to the moon, right, in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm. And they got some great revenue.
Well, the people who sold it, if you had, Matt Weber dot-bomb and it went from zero to 200, somebody sold it at 200. You gathered all his capital gains taxes, but as Mr. T would say, I pity the fool who bought it at 200 and sold it at 5. And it can only, and he's probably still taking his $3,000 a year, or hopefully he's still alive, off. Mm-hmm. So you essentially were able to tax one half of the transaction, and you didn't have to kick any back from the other half if you're the government. So I think they're looking to do that right now. They're inflating the crap out of the market with the idea that one of these days it'll turn. Even they must know that. That the idea that the people who made the money have to pay on it, and the people who lose on the way down don't get to deduct it. Mm-hmm. Now that's pretty crappy to do your population.
Oh, it's just been crappy all along. There's no way they're going to raise that. It would cost them too much.
Well, but I mean,
it would be good economically, because the kind of people that are that impacts, they're going to turn around and invest that money somewhere.
Well, I mean, literally, if somebody loses $50,000 on a stock purchase this week, as the stock is going up, which is going, I think it'll be up again today, and probably Friday, we have seasonals. This is normally a pretty strong week, and it has been so far, obviously. I mean, you could easily drop 10, 20, 40 grand on somebody's stock. I mean, I'm looking at this John Deere, for God's sake. The thing's $267. I mean, are these guys making 20 bucks a share? I don't think so. Maybe they are, but I suppose I should look that up. But I doubt that. Do you?
I mean, no, I don't. All the stocks are way ahead of themselves as far as prices go. You can't. That's undeniable. But we've been through two or three periods like this in both of our careers, and we know not to fight it.
But I'm saying a thousand shares of this stuff is what? Mm-hmm. $267,000. All right, so say somebody
people can't do that. That's why ETFs are so popular now.
But even if you bought 200 shares, mm-hmm. you know, that's $52,000. Well, you could easily, if the thing goes down, you could easily drop $10,000 there. And I mean, I'm not saying you should. I hope you do.
You're,
I don't.
You're, yeah. I mean, you could easily.
But I'm saying if you do and say screw it, I'm one salvo in the stock market. I lost my ass. Or I lost $10,000. I'm out of there for a while. It takes you 3 1/4, 3 1/3 years to write that off. The same amount of time it took when the entire Dow was 800.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that number never even get mentioned?
I don't think a lot of people, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it occurs to a lot of people that wouldn't it be great if we could raise that number?
Well, it occurs to you the minute you lose.
I mean, no, really, I don't think it even, it's never even occurred to me. You and I know, and this is something else that's kind of in the weeds within the financial markets, but every year, whenever they start talking about the tax code, they start talking about fewer and fewer ways that you know people in the financial industry or people with their investments are going to be able to take advantage of losses or using different types of derivative instruments, maybe changing the tax treatment of those things. They never talk about it being more favorable. If anything, they maybe that's a trick that they're using. They're talking about, all right, we're going to stop allowing favorable tax treatment on, on broad-based hedging-oriented derivatives. And we go in and we fight, and they say, okay, we'll let you guys keep that one. Maybe they do that so we feel like we're constantly winning, even though we're basically just getting the status quo.
But what I'm going
to
say.
I mean, I could see that maybe a great way to go about doing that.
Yeah, but there's one. I think Russell, you're showing your I won't say 1%er, but what percentage of the investing population, the PTI customers, the mm-hmm. Merrill Lynch customers? Notice how I got us both in the same sentence there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have a client who trades either the OEX, the SPX, or the RUT. I don't know. Matter of fact, I know we don't. Every trades a spider.
And that one actually extends to futures contracts as well.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For what it used to be, whenever we traded the OEX, that was one you're talking about. It was 60% long-term, 40% short-term, right?
Yeah. I remember when I started at SIBO, they proposed they proposed taking that 60-40 benefit or 60-40 status away. I'll call it that.
Well, they did this, the next best thing. They buried the contract.
Yeah, well, they buried. Well, now it's in SPX. You still get the contract moved over, the volume moved over there.
But my point was,
it came up. I'm working at SIBO. I've been there, like 9 months, and I start to have a little mini freak out. And I go and I talk to one of the grand poobahs, Jim Bittman, and Bittman goes, "Oh, they propose it every year." We go and we talk to him, and our lobbyist goes and talks to him, and then it's off the table eventually. Well, I'm just wondering if they propose, they propose a transaction tax, and everybody in Chicago freaks out about that one, and they pull back on that. But if Congress keeps doing it that way, where we get to maintain the status quo, and in the end of the day, we feel good about it. It's a way to mask some of the things that aren't fair, that are the status quo.
Well, what I'm saying is that in my day, obviously, I traded there for 19 years in the OEX. Mm-hmm. That's where retail people traded.
Mm-hmm.
So retail people, if you're dead at the time, because if he traded in the OEX and he made $50,000 that year, he was able to take advantage of the 60-40 treatment.
Yeah,
I'm saying you're dead now. Hopefully, I mean, if he's still trading, if he's still doing those kinds of things, he's in the spider. He's not trading the OEX. He's surely not trading the XPX at the size it is, or the RUT. I'm going to say they're, I won't say zero, but there's, you can count them on.
There's not a lot of retail participation in that area.
So you're talking about the people that are trading the big spiders, the ruts, and the OEX now are serious people that are used to getting what they want everywhere, tax code or otherwise.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But it's certainly not helping you or me. It's not like the CBOE, you know, split the OEX down to a $300 number where people could actually trade it, and that became the new spider, which I'd love to have happen, by the way.
They do have a 1/10 of the size SPX option contract that does not trade that well, which is unfortunate.
Well, because the spider's got it all locked up now.
Yeah.
In the minis.
I think if you could trade, and it's the ticker's XSP, and SIBO can send me a little check, you know, as a sponsor on that. But the big difference is it's an index option, it's cash settled, all that kind of stuff. But it's also certainly a 60-40 tax treatment. And if the liquidity would just kick in that contract, and they did a better job of letting people, you know, letting retail traders know that there's a nice alternative to the SPY, it probably would kick in volume wise. And, you know, the CME group across the street from SIBO, they've got, because the SPX went up so much price wise, they've got those, they have the mini contract, which we all think of as the normal contract to trade now, but now they've got one that's a tenth the size of that trades like crazy. And that's where retail traders that do a little research and figure out the best way to get that sort of short-term S&P 500 exposure, that's where they're trading now.
Well,
in the E-mini micro contract, what they call it.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. If you trade the E-minis, do you get, is there any long-term capital gain in there?
Oh, it's 60-40.
Oh, the E-mini is as well?
Yeah.
But the spider and the IWM and those things, they are considered just regular old security contracts. They're not.
They are not. And if anybody's listening and starts tweeting at me, I know there are people out there that will claim the 60-40 on their SPY trades. I know it.
Good luck with that.
On SPY option trades.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I can show you in the OCC documentation where it specifically says they are not 60-40 contracts. But a lot of people that do people's taxes don't know the difference between SPX and SPY. And when I was at SIBO, I'd have people go, well, I've been, you know, claiming 60-40 for 20 years. And I said, well, I hear people that do that. I hear it's never caught up with them. I said, but knowing what I know, I'm not taking the risk.
I'm sure there are people that took their dog off as a deduction for 20 years as well.
Oh, yeah, all kinds of stuff. But I would never... I would never do that. There are a lot of people out there that say, well, yeah, they really are broad-based index option, you know, and I've done it for this many years. First off, don't tweet that, because if the IRS sees you tweeting that, they're going to come see you.
Yeah, I would.
Keep it to yourself.
Is that why you should always give your dog like a regular person's name in case you want to do that?
That's right. Absolutely right.
You want to name your dog like, you know, Matt or something instead of Venkman, you know, just so you... Just saying, because
my dog is named Mookie Blaylock.
See, now how are you gonna deduct that? You know, if you name, it's a she, right?
She.
Just, if you named her like Susie or something, you can deduct her.
Yeah, a little too late for that. My girls all named our dogs after flowers.
Oh God! See, now you're letting. Yeah. Are you part of this decision making process on anything?
No, God, no.
How many females are in the place?
No, I was teaching a class. I've got a bunch of different sections at Loyola, and I have one section that I teach that's just all guys, and we joke around a little bit. And this kind of conversation came up, and one of the students said, Russell, blink twice if you need us to save you.
God. So what do you have?
No, it's how many fine. I have no decision making at the Pride.
How many females, including the dog, versus you?
5-1.
Oh God. Oh God.
I know.
It's bad. Well, it's great in a lot of ways, but
yeah, I love it. Our next door neighbor, the kid's 16, and he has friends over, and they're shooting baskets and stuff. And I see what idiots they are. I'm kind of glad I have girls. We're idiots. We're idiots. We know we're idiots.
That's where you need. That's where you needed to be on the south side, where once or twice a week you could walk out the front door, walk like 30 feet into the little tiny saloon, and at least watch a game with a couple other guys.
That is exactly what I need.
Yes, and I was talking earlier with Kevin as we continue. I guess these guys have their playbook now, and whatever it is, they're going to throw money at it. And in their mind, it's worked fine because it's worked fine for some people. And you and I are always looking at saying, okay, but you're forgetting about this, and this is liable to happen because it happened before. It's not like it. But my question is, and again, I remember the quote from Milton Friedman is the first, what was the term he used? The first feedback from inflation starting is so positive that people get addicted to it or something like that. He said something like it's the first six pack in the party where you're watching the game of the week. We need another six. But I guess my question is, and you're closer to these guys than I am. We seem to have a vaccine coming. The people that are going out of business in the last 2 weeks with the shutdown are people that run the place. We can say whatever we want, their motivation is. But they put more businesses under in the last 3 weeks than they did the first, the entire March through July turn time frame, in my opinion. Because I think I've seen more doors close in the last 2 weeks than I did then. And anyway, so we've got the vaccine allegedly coming, or we're going to declare victory one way or the other. We've got the market at record highs. We've got, Joe in, and everybody's happy. We've got what's her name into the Secretary of Treasury, which to me absolutely torpedoes any thought of an independent Fed. Whatever they want, the Fed just come up with the money. They might as well be the same person. We might as well just get rid of everybody at the Fed and say, if you want to spend something, just turn on the printing press. We don't need a third party to do that with all the people that work there and get paid. In one man's opinion, but why can't they say, all right, we did this. We might have done it a little too much. Maybe not, but at least let's cut back. I mean, why is it necessary to drive? Now, I'm not saying why is it necessary to drive the market to 30,000 and maybe 35,000 by the end? I mean, what is the motivation? Is it just greed at this point? This is look how this much works. I can make you rich. I mean, what is the motivation to do anything out of the ordinary right now with all this good news that hit the last 2 weeks?
What's the motivation to do? To keep pushing the market higher?
Well, keep pouring money in and keep pushing the market.
Why do we need to keep doing that?
It must be obvious to these guys that the money they're pouring into the place is not going. It's not going to the janitor in my building. It has to be obvious even to them that that's not happening. That some appreciable percentage of it is going right into asset prices.
I don't think that's where they. I really don't think that's where they hope all the money goes.
But it is. I mean,
or how? But I know, and I honestly, I think they want to. If they're, I like it, and of course, I always try to think of this as they're doing things right and doing things altruistically. I like to think they're sitting around the table going, okay, how do we, make sure that, the small business guys are around when this thing is done? How can we maintain that? But what ends up happening is the people that are smart enough to navigate the system and get a check from the government to keep things going, they're the ones that are almost getting to treat it like a COVID bonus. And when they get the money, they're like, all right, well, I'll just slap it into this will be my 401k or my IRA, contribution this year, and it's working its way into the stock market because there ain't anywhere else for it to go right now.
Well, they must know after
and I think they think it's going to be residual. Well, we know that we're going to do this, and 90% of the money is going to get where it needs to go, and 10% is going to end up going into the wrong pockets. But we're okay with that collateral damage. Maybe
well, you're never going to be perfect, but it took me. I did this study before COVID. It must have been like February. I did it. It was a snowy Saturday, so I dug around the internet for a while and I looked at the history of credit card pricing and or interest rate on credit cards. And I went back to like 2007, 2008, and when you know the regular interest rates were what you're. Fed funds was probably what 5-6 something like that, or not Fed fund rates. The mortgage rates were 5 and 6. Fed funds was probably what 3.5 or so. So I actually looked at it from it was like a 12-year study I did, and if I can do this in 45 minutes with my fat fingers on a computer that I'm not even like good at working, I had that the credit card rates and a lot of consumer loan rates were up significantly in the 12 years that everybody else went to zero interest. You can't tell me that those stooges at that table don't know that or couldn't find that out as fast as I could. And they have to ask themselves, what are we doing? And yet they don't.
I just don't think they have the real world experience to, you know, come up with, to figure it out or to realize what you're saying. Here's the other thing, is if there's no consequences behind bad actions, it's not going to get changed, and the consequences aren't really bad for them.
Well, so I mean, we got to go to break, but so what is the motivation if they screw up and we have really harmful inflation? Do we be like the communists and the Romanovs, we kill them all the way to the second cousin.
I think that's their biggest fear is that that you get massive social unrest.
Well, I mean, I think that's
the biggest fear is if we don't control, you know, the masses, we're going to end up what happened this past summer in just a few cities is going to become so widespread we're going to completely lose control.
Well, we'll get back from break.
That's really what I think.
Because Carl's been getting, you know, kind of aggressive about, you know, what should happen to some of these people.
I've seen the emails.
And I don't think he agrees with that, and I surely don't. But there can't be nothing. There can't be, hey, you buried a country with this inflation, and here's the 50 people that benefited. Oh, by the way, 45 of them are your friends. No, why don't you just go back to Harvard and become a tenured professor, and it's no skin off anybody's ass? Yeah, it is.
It is.
S&P futures down 250. NASDAQ futures up 27. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Tavis Katina there as well. SP Futures down 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 34. Dow Futures down 55. Jobless claims 778 versus 773 estimate. So anybody thinks that this economy, if you, that's why we've got everybody looking at their 401k and their stocks, and the 20% of the people, however many that own stocks in this country, and we're hoping that they carry the day because we're driving that up, but the rest of it does not look good. It absolutely does not. Well, you can count that any which way you want, but the fact is it does not. Continuing claims are like a 6.7 million or some number. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 35.3%, FTSE down 37.6%, CAC around down 9.2%, so a little bit lower than before, but not much. Asia, we've got the, as soon as Asia wants to pop up here, there we go. Nikkei up 131.5%, they've been really strong lately. Shanghai down 40.2%, Hang Seng up 81.3%, as a way of review of yesterday's record day. Dow 454, 30,046. Who'd have thought it? Who'd have thunk? When I came into market, I'm going to say the day my first day of trading floor, the Dow was 810, 820.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then it went lower from there. S&P was up 57, 1.6%. NASDAQ was up 156, 1.3. Bonds, 10-year, same thing. 0.87. Bund, minus 0.57. Japan, positive 0.015. Oil. Oil continues to rally here. I don't know what people think out of the Biden administration with pro-oil, but some of this stuff is pretty counterintuitive. Up 67 cents, 45.58. That's as high as we've seen in quite a while. Brent up 67 cents, 48.53. Natural gas down 3 cents, 273. RBOB is up a penny to 127. Gold up 790 now, 18.12. Dead cat bounce, boom. Silver up 15 cents, 23.45. Copper, here's the one, 330. Unchanged today, but that's high. And again, the copper stocks, again, I used to trade this as a copper stock all the time, FCX. Then they bought a gold company. It got kind of clouded, so I haven't really done much in there. But I think the stock traded like $5 last April, and it's 23. Wow. I wish I had just kind of bought some of that and worked on my golf game. Anyway, who's ever doing traffic, weather, sports? Let's have it.
Good morning. 7:37 in Chicago. Traffic today, very light holiday traffic, still misty out there, so be careful. Weather today currently in Chicago is 45 degrees and foggy. The high today will be a wonderful 48 degrees with rain and drizzle most of the day. To our Phoenix listeners, currently it's 45 and clear. High today, 72 and sunny. Now to sports. Big day for college basketball. Starts off. Illinois, I believe, plays at 1 o'clock. In college football, the first rankings came out. Alabama, number one. Notre Dame, two. Clemson, followed by Ohio State. Back to you.
This is the first time I actually think that the Irish personnel-wise sort of belong with that group. All the other years, they snuck up there once in a while. I have a question for you guys. I know you guys are music aficionados. It is very unusual that my Notre Dame gang, who are crazed on music and always have been. My buddies from California were going to concerts when they were like 14 years old, sneaking out the back door. Temptation song. Papa was a Rolling Stone. How many times have you listened to this song? Russell and David or Matt, who's ever on the thing over there. In the line where it says, and when he died, all he left us was blank.
Blank.
I have no idea.
Blank.
That's before my time.
Oh, God. You had to have heard it in the last 2 months. They played in
the... Oh, gosh. That was the other thing. I think it's been 20 years since I actually heard that song.
Anyway. Well, for years and years, people thought, well, our guys thought, and when he died, all he left us was alone, meaning A-L-O-N-E. It turns out the lyrics are alone, A-L-O-A-N. And my guys were absolutely dumbstruck that they had that wrong all those years. They thought all he left us was alone, meaning without a dad. What he left us was alone, meaning we owed dough for the guy. There's the difference, just saying.
Well, there you go. Hey, when you're going through the numbers, you said that, you know, who thinks that the Biden administration is going to be good for oil? Don't you think they're going to increase restrictions on oil drilling in the U.S.?
Like I said, how's that? Well, I mean, you're talking about...
That pushes the price up. It does. If there's less of it coming out of the ground, that's going to result in higher prices. I would not be surprised if we get some sort of military conflict in the next couple of months in the Middle East. That our buddies over in that part of the world will be afraid. You know, are going to be afraid that Biden might not be as supportive of the anti-Iran crowd as Trump has been. So maybe they're thinking about, and I saw, I think, a day or two ago that the Saudis and Israel are talking to each other. And if they're talking to each other, they have, you know, one common enemy, or maybe two, but definitely one in the form of Iran. So I'm wondering if, where I'm going with that is I'm wondering if maybe a geopolitical risk premium is starting to creep back into the price of oil.
Well, actually, I was reading yesterday at the new, I forget who the new... I don't know if he's Secretary of Defense or whatever he is, but the new group seems to really favor, instead of Trump calling out like Iran and having his big thing that's the big boy or whatever his style was, that these guys love this proxy war stuff. You know, we'll fight Iran in Yemen or someplace. Which, I tell you what, I really can't stand that, but that, you know, nobody's asking me. The idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that died with the Spanish Civil War, but evidently it hasn't. Right? That was another proxy war.
No, I think it's gotten worse.
It's gotten worse. Yeah. Where you fight a war over here, and it was like the you know, us messing, arming Bin Laden and all those idiots to mess with the Russians in Afghanistan. Right? I mean, this group has a different view than the Trump group. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I actually think that Mike Pompeo did one hell of a job, considering the fact
You know, beyond that, and I know that most of Trump's behavior is very indefensible, but, you know, four and a half years ago, when we were leading up to the election, and then after he got elected, there was this, you know, everybody was afraid he was going to pull us into a new military conflict. We did not start a new military conflict in the last 4 years,
which is rare for us.
Yeah, and you know, and maybe he's upset that he didn't get a war, so now he wants to do something in the last 2 months. I think if he does you're going to love this. I think if he does anything that starts to push us in a dangerous direction, I think they actually should impeach him.
I think
if he really starts to go off the rails.
I think the army won't do it.
They should impeach him very quickly.
I think the army won't do it. Just like they wouldn't.
I don't think they would follow him either, but.
Just like they wouldn't go into, he wanted him to go into cities for the riots and they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. And after the election becomes official, when, you know, in about 2.5-3 weeks or so, I think it's December 12th. But if he refuses to work with the incoming administration, I think they should impeach him. I think it should get him out of there and put Pence in place, and Pence will at least work with them on a transition, because part of the 9/11 report actually said that that there might have been some gaps in the intelligence and how it was all coming together and being worked on, because the 2000 election was delayed and the transition was a little bit off between Clinton and Bush, not because they were not because they were intentionally, you know, subjugating each other, but because there was this 3 or 4 week period of complete uncertainty. So I really do think when this thing becomes official, if he does anything to not facilitate a transition, that they ought to step right in there and just kick him out.
Well, it seems like people like to challenge the next president whenever he gets in there. I mean,
I wonder if some of that is starting to creep into the market. Because you know that North Korea is going to do something stupid this spring.
Well, I mean,
it may not be any more dramatic than they've done in the past because they don't have any money to do anything with. But
right.
It's very possible that they, they may blow something up or, you know, fire a few missiles to show, look what we can do now, or things like that. I do think that for a number of reasons, that the price of oil might be showing a little bit of a geopolitical
but Russell, work it down from the top. I mean, mm-hmm. you're right. Say they put rules back on fracking. All right, so there's a little less oil in this country. Well, the whole world's awash in oil. Okay, but I agree with you. Any restriction of supply is going to cause the price to go up. In the short term.
It's a tight supply demand market. It's probably the most. You know, probably the best example of how economics are supposed to work in the real world example of how economics is supposed to work.
But you have, last time I checked, there's 21 countries that are exporting oil. So, I mean, it's a world.
To the other 800. We're a net exporter now, aren't we?
Not exactly.
Well, we're kind of. Are we just taking care of. I feel like we're at least just taking care of ourselves.
I think there's. I don't think we are. This is always a big debate, and I'll dig it in for next week because I like to go through it every now and then. We are exporting some. We always did out of Valdez because we couldn't take that much here. But the net is we're using, was it 11 million barrels a day, and we're producing like 8 or something. So, I mean, we're exporting oil and we're importing gasoline, something somewhere. We're not every single day flat here or a surplus yet. I don't think. Although I'll have to check that because we were a lot closer to it last time than I thought. Anyway, but in terms of the oil, I think that the administration or some people think that in 8 years, if nobody ever used a gallon of gas again for cars, that would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. So the long term. Use of the product out of this administration has got to be worse than a Trump thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a question of which one you, how far out you go or you don't. And, I'm kind of curious is if all of a sudden every car on the street, this is something, you know, the gaps in the news, Russell, I mean, that's why you and I like, I mean, why I like talking to you, is you fill in gaps. You don't create the gap. explain to me how exactly. I'm not saying we should have kept them going, although for a certain amount of money we could have made them table ready, shall we say, for this. We knocked down the 3 remaining coal plants in Chicago, Pilsen, the one in Crawford, and the one in Whiting, right? Now, I'm not, those things were, you know, artifacts. For bazillions of dollars, we could have upgraded them to where they were pollution okay, but we decided not to, and down they come. But I mean, we're talking about massive plants, massive, mm-hmm. massive amount of electricity. So if we have, I'm going to say in the Chicago area, pick a number, David or Matt, who's ever over there, 6 million cars? All right, something like that? 5?
Okay.
Tomorrow, they're all electric. Now, I know we can throw a couple of panels on somebody's roof, but who are we kidding?
Yeah.
But who are we kidding? Electric trucks, electric everything. Where is that capability going to come from if we, at the same time, we're pulling all the fossil fuels out of the electric companies and, oh, by the way, closing the nukes? Tell me where that's going to come from. It's not going to come from a windmill in Chinatown. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I wish it would come from nukes. because they're not nearly as risky as people.
Well, nobody's ever going to build a new one. In fact, these other ones.
And if anything, we're losing that production. I know that.
And what about the one?
By the way, I texted probably the smartest oil trader I know, and she came back to me with we went back to being a slight net importer as of July of oil, but we had been a net exporter for some time.
Of oil, but does that include all the products?
Yeah. No, just oil.
Okay, but I mean, if we're...
We're talking about the oil market.
But if we're importing gasoline and exporting crude, it gets us to the same place, right?
You don't import gasoline. Don't you take the oil and it gets refined at places here in the U.S.?
I think we're in some areas. See, a lot of this is sort of weird because remember when we couldn't export oil, yet we could trade?
Yeah, it was illegal.
But... Even that was BS because mm-hmm. when the stuff was coming off the North Slope, and we needed oil in Louisiana because that's where the pipelines go to the Midwest and the East, right? Well, mm-hmm. what would happen was the Japanese would allegedly buy oil from the Saudis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want to ship it from Saudi to Japan, and basically go through the Panama Canal and do that stuff, or? Since we had so much coming off the North Slope going to the Valdez, should we just ship the Japanese the oil from there and us take the stuff going by us from Saudi? Now, that was, quote, legal or a workaround or whatever you want to call it for 40 years.
Yeah.
So, but in theory, what are we doing? Well, we're exporting to Japan, right? And we're importing from Saudi. But it was never considered that way. It was kind of like a trade. So it's not like if you're the right guy, you can't get around this stuff, Russell, right?
Oh, gosh, no. And there are people that made a whole living off of that.
So when is there any chance, since you and I seem to be on the same page on this inflation part, is there any chance that the current group, because, I mean, I'm appalled by this Janet Yellen appointment, to be honest with you, but I don't want to go into it again. Is there any chance that she and Powell and these people, with all everybody celebrating the hell out of this market, is there any chance that they cut back what they're doing in a logical manner, or are we going to have a crisis?
Things don't change until you get a crisis.
you know?
And so, unfortunately, I think that's what's going to happen.
If we get the crisis and it causes the pain it did in the late 70s, and all of a sudden, the people are still making $36,000 a year in a median income. We'll make that mm-hmm. 37, that was 33 20 years ago. If all of a sudden those people get like a 20% inflation dropped on them in the next 2 years, do they get to go and like take the people from the Fed and ship them to a penal colony in New Zealand or someplace? What do we do with them? I mean, it can't just be, well, you get to resign and we'll give you your pension. I mean, somehow that's getting old to me. I mean, you know, I mean, if we could figure out that Jay Pritzker closed nursing homes to guests because of his family's ownership of nursing homes, or if we know people closed outdoor dining when they have actually studies on their desk saying that's like a real bad idea. I mean, what do you do to these people? I mean, they think they're dictators in all these spots now, and I don't think they know what they're doing, Russell. I honestly don't.
There's no repercussions for being wrong. You know, there's let's try this, let's show that we're trying to do something. But yeah, they like you said, what ends up, what's the worst case scenario for them?
Well, but I mean, if
it's like an asymmetric outcome.
But there's in my industry, I mean, if I do a trade for somebody with the best intentions, and I do it for myself too, and all of a sudden, you know, whatever, it just goes wrong, well, hopefully, I mean, that happens. Hopefully it doesn't happen too often. That's one thing. But if you could prove that the reason why I did that for you is because I, quote, took the other side or something, I used all my people's money to buy stock in XYZ because that got me on the board of XYZ. Or if you could prove anything like that, that's not just Chief making a mistake, trying as hard as he could. I think these people are all co-opted somehow. I mean, I think it's worse than just than I mean, I can't put my finger on it, Russell, but you could be one of the only people that know what I'm talking about here. Is that in my lifetime, in my business lifetime, not just lifetime, I look at the Resolution Trust and I look what happened in 2007, 2008. And in both instances, a little bit of what happened in 2000, but a little bit there, I see incredible transfers of wealth from people that used to own stuff through no fault of their own being out and new people in there for 40 cents on the buck. And I see that happening again right now. I mean, somebody's going to own, you know, the chicken joint on the corner or Mexican joint on the corner, and it's not going to be the guy who used to own it. He's broke. And not only was he broke, we couldn't have the decency to tell him in March, close the place up, take your savings and go home. We had to string the guy out to where he's totally broke and he's on his credit cards, and now he finally says, I got to go because you guys are not only killing me, but you're hanging me upside down on top of it. I mean, and now if somebody's going to walk in there, I mean, I know there's going to be a taco available in this neighborhood 2 years from now. It's just not going to be the same guy. And I watched that happen with Paul Volcker and the Resolution Trust. We saw that happen in 2007, 2008, where, sure, everybody's in a house again. It's just not the same owner. And he's still screwed someplace, and now somebody else is in there for $160,000 instead of the $230,000 the original guy paid, even though he never missed a mortgage payment. I mean, and the people who get in there always seem to be more connected than the ones before with the quote new leaders. And you know what, Russell? I've seen it happen twice. I don't want it to happen again, or I almost want to get violent. I don't.
Well, and that's what you just said. The last thing that you just said, I think that's the only fear that they have, is that we're going to get violent, that everybody, and that there's going to be a consensus of being upset. Yeah, it was not, 51% of the U.S. was not rioting over the summertime. But if things got really bad, it could end up in a place like that. And that's where the leaders get afraid.
Well, one of the...
That's when you end up with French Revolution type stuff. And, the king would always do as much as he wanted to do just to make sure they didn't rise up and take his head.
But somehow... Somehow, Russell, and I know we're not off the rails, but somehow there has to be, I think the screw up in this whole mess is we have too many people in power that have no idea what it's like being not getting the government paycheck.
They don't know the fear of losing their job.
But yesterday I went through, briefly, is that if you and I, it was Chief and Russell's hamburger joint in March, hamburger joint and beer bar and beer joint. We probably had some, if we've been there a while, I'm going to guess we have some retained earnings built up. And these people come out to us and they say, we're going to close for 2 weeks. Well, make that 4 weeks, whatever, make that 6 weeks. So we walk through some of our money, and oh, by the way, we get this PPP, so we get some of it back. So maybe even by the end of June, we're, close to flat. We at least got most of our money still in the bank. Now all of a sudden, we're draining a little bit. Now are we going to do? We're going to shut them down one more time and another time. Now all of a sudden we're probably going through our money and running credit cards, thinking we're just going to hang in here. That's just what we do. We're not quitters. Now yesterday I heard one of our stupid politicians, and I forget the name because I don't want to say it anyway, said the vaccine is coming. Just hang in there, like closed. Okay, now hang in there another four. Why is somebody getting a paycheck that I'm paying them telling me to hang in there when they close my place? First of all, why would you ever say something that's stupid? I think the first thing I would do if I came down here as God, I would say, all these people making decisions, none of you are getting a paycheck till this is over. Not one teacher's getting a paycheck until kids are back in school. That only then can a decision be proper. Only then.
See, that right there is where you where if you're a political leader, what you just said, the teachers don't get a paycheck, that's when you are going to be worried about losing your head.
Well, but I get
you
that
don't
part.
Want to fight with the teachers.
Well, I understand that. I understand that. But
it's funny because when you're elected mayor of Chicago, the first group that comes after you is the teachers union. when you get elected president of the United States, some bad actor on the global stage comes after you.
Yeah.
It's almost the same thing.
I don't, but that doesn't mean the money still adds up. I mean, I can't, the last Friday, I don't know what the hell was I, or Saturday, I was home listening to something, and somebody comes up with this big study, said the average student has lost 6.8 months of education in the last, since last December. Now,
I don't know about that.
All right,
I mean, maybe my kids are a little bit better than
they're average. They're not average.
But I would say that, you know, maybe a couple hours a day of school days, and let's say since then there's been 100 school days.
Your kids are not average.
Hours. I'd say maybe a week or two.
Your kids are not average.
6 months is,
they still
six
have,
months is B, 6 months is BS.
They still have thousands of kids in the Chicago public schools and others they haven't even found for this year.
Oh, yeah.
That don't have, whatever. I actually thought that was a little high. All right. So say it's,
I'm like,
so say
that's basically all the school time.
All right. So say across the board, say it's 3 months or 4 months, mm-hmm. right? And now we were still not back at school. So say at the end of this year, it's 6 months, and not one of those people ever lost a paycheck. And all they're doing is whining about they don't want to start next year. Well, somewhere, I got to stop. It's not a question. If we all had the money, if we were all working, which fortunately you and I are, what if we're not? How do you tell the guy from the restaurant who just closed, by the way, this teacher, he's home, he needs a paycheck. Why? I'm home, I'm broke. He's home, why do I got to pay him? I mean,
I can tell you that I do know there's one private school out here in the Western Burbs that cut teachers' pay this year.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
But you can't do it to public school teachers, but you can to private school teachers.
Well, currently.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Hey, Russell, take care of yourself, bud. I mean, but these are all real issues. I mean, and they... you and I don't know the answers, but at least we're ferreting out some of the questions because there's a lot of them. So you
have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
And don't hurt yourself when you deep fry the turkey.
Oh, God. We don't do that. SP Futures down 250. NASDAQ is up 29. Well, let my brother take care of it. We'll be back Friday. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.